You're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips. Joining me in this endeavor into geekdom is TFG1 Mike.
Hello, I am here.
He almost had a British,
hello, I'm here.
Hello, I am here.
You gotta do that in your Boston accent. Anyways. So
stay smart, stay far apart.
Where are my car keys?
That's right. They ain't in Harvard Yards.
Except they're talking about their khakis, not their car keys. I saw that meme and it was like, yeah, this is what it sounds like to you, what it means for them.
Yeah.
You just ruined my car keys.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So today we're going to talk about accessibility for gamers, which we saw our podcasting friend Steve Saylor post. And we're going to talk about custom figures and specifically how Batman the Animated Series is more or less making a comeback in various forms.
Yes. So our good buddy Steve Saylor from This Week in Geek, thisweekingeek.net. I've always wanted to have Steve on to talk about this because he is the blind gamer. He is a blind gamer. I also have visual issues. I mentioned on a – I guess we can mention this here since it'll be out anyway. We have launched a new show called Studio 2009. You and I have, and we'll talk about that at the end of the podcast. But the point is, on there I mentioned my visual issues, or on the episode of the pullback, we just – I don't know, whatever. Point is, I was born with what they call optic atrophy with nystigmatism, and optic atrophy is nerve damage, LASIK, like it's nerve damage to the, you know, the optic nerve. There's nothing there. Like glasses will work, and I've had glasses before and I need to get glasses again, but there is nothing, no LASIK, no surgery can fix the blindness that I have. Now I can see. It's just I can't see far away kind of stuff. Like, perfect example is if I'm in the car with my wife and we're two blocks away from a stop sign, I can see that it's red. I can see that it's the stop sign, rectangle, octagon, whatever shape it is. But I can't actually read STOP on the sign until I get much, much closer.
Yeah, that's quite a bummer, actually. I'm not that bad. I do have depth perception issues, mm-hmm. to where I had to get glasses because I could not, I couldn't tell if I was going to hit something or not. Specifically when I was driving, and also I for the most part, even with glasses, I can't read the road signs. Until I'm like right up on them as far as like street signs or like if it's a stop sign, I obviously know by the shape and the color and I see the blurry words. If I struggle hard enough with my sight, I can read it. But the point is, I still have to have glasses to see it. And I used to have great eyesight and it depends on the day, but yeah, I can totally relate, but he's definitely like uber blind.
And we don't mean that in a bad way, Steve.
No, but I mean, like, I get his issue of needing things a little bit more accessible.
And especially in gaming.
Yeah, because there's a lot going on the screen. And I even for me, where I don't necessarily need the glasses, I mean, I'm nearsighted. So being right up on my monitor, I can read everything. Now, after a while, there comes a point where I need to wear my glasses or I will have issues seeing because I have to struggle too much to read it. And especially when I play games, I forget to blink and the glasses kind of help to regulate my eyes so that they aren't as stressed as they would be.
Yep.
So no, I mean, I totally get it. Like gaming is one of those things where if you're going to be playing, you kind of need to be able to see everything, and a lot of it's either reading or hand-eye coordination or making you see something that's very small on your screen.
Yep. Now, for me, hand-eye coordination, in the 80s, that's why we played video games, and that's why we play video games today, too. But I would play games all the time. I had some kick-ass hand-eye coordination, even though I still had to sit, like, almost in front of the television to be able to see it. And it just, it's one of those things where these game companies need to be mindful of everybody's limitations and improve upon their games to fit. If they want to reach the most wide audience, games need to be able to be accessible for everybody, not just regular people with 20/20 or 20/50 vision or whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, even not even talking about visual, but having as far as the controllers are concerned, like I know you have a disability that doesn't allow you to play modern gaming.
I can do PC. Yeah, I can do PC gaming, but I can't do modern controllers much at all. Basically, for those who haven't listened to this podcast in the last almost 7 years, I was born with a mild case of cerebral palsy. This also goes into effect of why I have the optic atrophy with nystigmatism, because when I was, and I know this is going to sound gross, even though I'm not going to try to make it gross, when I was growing inside my mother when she was pregnant with me, a piece of my brain did not form, so I'm actually missing a piece of my brain. I only found this out a year ago. It's called the corpus callum. It's basically the thing in the back of your head that links your left and right hemispheres. I don't have it. Apparently, if it doesn't form within, like, I think, week 17 or 18 or something like that, it never does. And I was basically born broken. I have the cerebral palsy, which affects the right side of my body. And basically as a kid, I had to teach myself to play video games one-handed. It's actually the one physical skill I actually, you know, really tout over for myself, because I can take an NES controller. I can take a Sega Genesis controller. I can take a Super Nintendo controller. I can palm it in my left hand, use, my thumb for the buttons, and use my pinky or my ring finger for the D-pad. And that only works if the controller is not, you know, a giant Xbox original controller. Oh my God, that Xbox controller was like, I have a big left hand. That thing is like three times the size of my hand.
The original Xbox controller was atrocious. It was actually very difficult for somebody that's able-bodied to use as well. Which is why I enjoy when they switch to the other style that they came up with for the Xbox 360 and Xbox One. I actually rather like that design. Now, that being said, I grew up on Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo and Game Boy and things like that. So those controllers weren't too bad either. Funny thing is on Altered Geek about 2 years ago, an article came out about July 2018 that Microsoft had created a new adaptive controller, which puts players back in the game, basically. It's a $100 adaptive controller that lets you plug in the gadgets that you need.
Oh, wow.
So, now, I don't know if this ever got released. That's the other thing, which I'm digging into right now. It does look like it exists. But unfortunately, you can only get it on eBay, it looks like, so it must not have lived very long. Although, no, you can still get it from Microsoft Store. Yeah, I saw it on eBay for like $160, $200, but Microsoft sells it for $100.
Wow.
And it says that you can create a custom controller experience that is uniquely yours, designed primarily to meet the needs of gamers with limited mobility. The Xbox Adaptive Controller features large programmable buttons and connects to external switches, buttons, mounts, and joysticks to help make gaming more accessible. It requires external devices for gameplay, which they sell that, all that separate. But so basically, right, you can create a custom controller that is special to you and
That's very cool.
It's a lot of large programmable buttons, connects to all kinds of different things. And it works for Xbox One and Windows 10 PCs, because everything that works for Xbox One works for Windows 10.
Windows, exactly.
So, so there is an option in that sense. It does have the D-pad on there, and it has, you know, your settings and your start box, and then a couple other buttons, and then it's got the two gargantuan buttons that you can program everything every which way that you need to. So it's rather interesting how they got this device. And it allows people that can't play games to be able to do it. And it fits across your lap. But ultimately, if you're unable to hold that little tiny controller with buttons and you need it for this stuff, it's honestly a good way to go. But no, I thought that bringing this up, we should bring that up. So basically what Steve is trying to do, and he actually made all over the internet, like vice.com and things, which is awesome to bring attention to that. He says, when I started, I thought being blind was just my niche, differentiating myself from other gaming channels. At first, my channel was just about how I sucked at video games. That was the comedy of it. But, he was invited to a conference by Ubisoft and, was on a panel with other people talking about it. And then he says he realized that he wasn't that he sucked at games. It was the game sucked for me.
Right.
And he said that, so he kind of gives entertaining and educational looks into the world of visual impairment and, you know, kind of has it more or less as a jumping off point, for the bigger talk on it. And he's not wrong. I mean, games are pretty much made for, like, even me, I'm not, like, my hands, I have, like, these intense pain in my hands from time to time, and it makes it very difficult for me to even play a game for very long. Like, I can't anything more than, like, 45 minutes on a controller, and my hands are just dying. And so, like, I think I have, like, some kind of a chronic, like, arthritis or something in my hands, and it's not really a disability. It's just, I mean, it kind of turns into one, but it's not inherently one that I had. So I kind of get where, you know, how older consoles were, you know, a little bit easier, despite the fact that, they weren't disabled friendly.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, he says he's got the involuntary eye movement, which makes it hard for his eyes to focus. Which he has the glasses to help with that. But yeah, I mean, it's, I totally resonate with that. I mean, it's, even though I don't suffer physically from it, I can definitely see we're bringing awareness to it to allow people to even be able to get in that entry of it is a good idea.
Absolutely.
So what are some of your thoughts on it?
I mean, yeah, like, you know, you were saying about the you know, your eyes and how he was saying about his with what he has to do. For me, I have, because of the, I don't know if it's because of the optic atrophy or what it's because of, but my eyes, I don't actually see them doing this, but if you look at me close enough, my eyeballs will just be shaking all over the place. And for me, I have total center vision with my right eye. My right eye is my dominant eye. My left eye, I have like maybe 0.5% center vision. It's all peripheral. So if I'm standing here in my room looking at the wall, that's what my right eye sees. My left eye can move all the way over to the left. I can see my nightstand, what I have on my nightstand, and my closet without actually turning my head to the left. The problem with my right eye having it be the dominant eye is I have zero peripheral. Like, I have to actually turn my head to the right to be able to see stuff on my right side because I have no peripheral vision in that. It's so, so weird. And I'm glad that Steve Saylor is talking about this stuff, because everybody has something. Everybody, whether it's blindness, whether it's whatever, I'm glad he's bringing awareness to this. I hope it keeps up. I hope he can spread his message as far as and wide as possible, because game companies need to know this, not just Nintendo, Sega, PlayStation, Microsoft, but like the game developers need to know this. So that way they can still work on the awesome games that they want to create, but also incorporate things for visually impaired people.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. I think that this is something that's kind of long overdue as far as gamers are concerned. Because even in this article, it says that, you know, there's a large population of that kind of suffers from this disability, a disability. According to Able Gamers Foundation, there are 33 million disabled gamers in America alone. So, I mean, by him bringing, you know, the notice to it, and there usually are a few people that do things like this. It's still nice to see it.
Right.
Just as a goodwill thing, even. But yeah, you can find out more absolutely. About their charity, ablegamers.org, if you're looking for more information on that. And they use the hashtag so everyone can game.
Absolutely.
So speaking of things that kind of traverse into the gaming field and kind of fitting into custom capabilities for people, Batman the Animated Series is kind of making its own comeback in not only comic form, but there's a person online that's been making custom figures using the animated series to make some of the other Batman properties, such as the 1989 movie and Returns.
Yes, this is from Zillu 1984. If I'm saying that Instagram name wrong, I'm sorry. He doesn't just make, it isn't just the animated series figures. That's mainly what it is, but basically he's doing them in the style of 89 and they look really, really cool. Very, very cool. Actually, you look at the Batman and Joker one, he basically has the Batman 89 Batman logo, and then at the bottom it has the animated series part of it. And Joker's face looks just like Mark Hamill, but he's dressed as Jack Nicholson's character. Same thing with Batman. Looks like the Kevin Conroy Batman, except it's in the black 89 suit. So it's very, very cool. I think all of these look really, really interesting. He actually does a before and after shot on Instagram of what the Catwoman BTAS figure looks like. So her gray with the black gloves and all of that. And he turns that into the Michelle Pfeiffer version. He did Nightwing and Batgirl from Batman and Robin.
Well, what's funny is he uses the figures that are the 20th anniversary ones.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the DC collectibles ones are where they're fully detailed. And he actually redid quite a few different people. He's done Poison Ivy, like totally did a head swap.
Mm-hmm.
Recreation with the better hair, with the color accuracy, and the face is color accurate. He's done the Nightwing from it for the like Batman and Robin and Batgirl from that. He's done, you know, the majority of the Bat films out of those. He's got a Ninja Turtle with like an April O'Neil.
Yep.
He's even got the Catwoman from the Long Halloween. He's got like before and after photos of like the Joker being painted. The 89 Batman one I think is pretty awesome actually. And then he's got almost kind of a the Michael Keaton face drawn on it.
Yeah.
Which is immensely cool. And he's also got a lot of the other kind of, you know, the Joker's trio make him laugh episode, the Rat Pack, which is funny to me, actually. But no, I mean, it's really cool to see the amount of work and effort that goes into these figurines, and that some of it is custom made, specifically so that they're fully detailed.
Yeah, absolutely, and it is super cool. I really dig a lot of his designs. Like, yeah. They're really nice.
Yeah, and like even like the Poison Ivy thing, like he sells the heads.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so you can swap them out and in some of the other figures. So, yeah, definitely somebody you should check out. I'm gonna link that in the show notes, so you'd be able to check it out.
Absolutely.
I really want to see. I mean, granted, a lot of his stuff is very, very detailed compared to the master figures that we get presented originally. He adds a lot more detail and makes them look a lot more show accurate, which is, again, it's, you have an individual carving it instead of a machine mass producing. So it's going to look better.
Yeah.
That being said, custom figures are actually something that have always interested me in more ways than one. The Beast Wars figures a long time ago, they used to have it was on Unicron.com. They had this thing called Alterations for Transformers figures, and I used to look at them because people would remake, and I don't know if they still have this section. I'll have to check. But they used to have all of these Transformers on there that people would custom rebuild, such as like Beast Wars Megatron from Beast Wars, and he's the dragon. They completely rebuilt him so that the wings are accurate, and so that you could actually make him so he could wrap up and turn into the Beast Machines version.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah, and I always wanted to duplicate that, but I was never good enough at it. And they made Optimal Megatron on there, and repainted Rampage, and, you know, done a lot of these other custom jobs to the figures. And so I was always trying to duplicate some of it, and I never got that good enough to do it. But I always enjoyed it. I actually did, you know, during the original years of Geekcast Radio, we did a pull bag where I made a custom Batman Beyond Return of the Joker figure.
Mm-hmm.
Which I still have, because I did try and sell it on eBay at one point, but nobody bought it. And I was like, it's probably because it's custom and nobody wants custom. They want the actual. But I took a Nightwing figure, sanded down the Nightwing crest on the chest. And after smoothing it out, I popped the head and replaced it with one of those, the Joker figures that they made from Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah,
and I swapped out the head, and then I shaved down the hair and then painted it over, and it looks like Batman Beyond Joker, which was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, it was. I remember you doing that. Very cool.
Yep. And so, like, now I got bored a couple weeks ago, and I rebuilt, I took an old Hot Wheel Matchbox car, and I repainted it to look like my old 80s truck, which I did a surprisingly good job at it. There's some aspects where I could be nitpicky on the paint, because not only is my hand not very steady, but I didn't have the right shaped bristle to do some of the finer details. But I basically, because they don't make the 89 S15 GMC vehicle. Right. So I bought a Hot Wheel car and a Johnny Lightning car, which actually that one's more accurate, but I bought them of the 91 GMC Sonoma Cyclone, and it looks pretty close, but there's some aspects that are different. The boys actually had a late 80s, early 90s Dodge Dakota matchbox car. And the paint was flaking. It was red. It had like the rally package thing in the back where it's got like the roll bar things in the bed of the truck that have the lights on the top over the cab. I cut those out and then I repainted the whole thing to look like my truck, and it actually, surprisingly, it has the boxy feel that I was looking for. It has the stuck out bumpers, and then it actually has like shocks in this thing, which was surprising because none of the Hot Wheels have shocks in them. And this was like before Hot Wheels owned Matchbox. So wow. I had a lot of fun painting this thing, and then I was able to push it down. It looks good now. I still want to write the words GMC where they're supposed to go, but I can't get my hand steady enough to write it with a paintbrush without having to repaint the black. So I just don't. But I subtly hinted at Hot Wheels on Twitter. I was like, hey, look what I made. I'm like, I think you should make a GMC S15 and make it look like this. And then I posted a picture of my truck with it. But they liked it. If they ever do, great. But I doubt it. I just I was like purposely, hey, let's see if this happens, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know if you don't ask, and maybe it'll put a thought.
Exactly.
Like, maybe we should make the 89 S15.
Yep.
But yeah, so customizing figures from time to time or customizing toys is something I rather enjoy.
Yeah, I wish I had that level of talent. I don't.
I'm not talented. I just, because in all honesty, they'd look like hot garbage when you're up close, but the Hot Wheel car I was somewhat impressed. The Joker, I kind of botched part of the face because I had to repaint a decent chunk of it to make it kind of uniform with the Return of the Joker aesthetic. So but I guess I wonder, and this is kind of a question for the listeners on this. Question one, do you suffer from any accessibility issues for gaming? And if you do, let us know what it is, so we can bring that up on the next episode. And then as far as custom figures are concerned, have you ever bought custom figures or made your own custom figures? I would be interested to know that. And if you have, you have to send us some pictures, because I would be very interested in seeing what level of complexity you've managed to tackle.
Yes, that would be very cool to know. I have not bought any custom figures. I don't know. I have this problem now where
problem where
I'm kind of over the whole toy thing except for one piece of it, only because they're easy to collect and I don't have to catch them all, but I like catching the ones that I like from the franchises that I like. And I don't know, like, regular action figures take up too much room. And if you have too many of these things, they take up too much room as well. However, I just can't get away from Funkos. They just, the level of detail that these artists put into them, the level of detail any artist puts into any toy, I absolutely appreciate. But I have never, like, you take Neil, TV's Mr. Neil's cell shaded illustration of me, and you know, you take it to Hasbro or whoever, you know, sure, I'd love to have a custom figure of myself, but I've never actually wanted a custom figure of, say, like your Batman Beyond Return of the Joker. Because I'm just like, I can watch the movie. I don't know. Like, I understand why people want them and like them and enjoy them, and that's great. I absolutely, there's a lot of customizers out there that I love and respect. It's just, it's not one of those things for me, I guess.
I totally get it, though.
Yeah. And besides, if you watch that one Big Bang Theory episode, customization for yourself is very expensive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
$500 for little 5-inch figures of yourselves? But it's the Star Trek Mego style. I don't care.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay that. But,
you know, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, if I could find a way to make custom action figures of myself, I probably would. I know that it's possible. I don't know if I want to tackle it. But yeah, I mean, I would be interested in seeing if anybody's actually done any of this. And if they can send an email, feedback@geekcastradio.com, or just leave it on the social media for either Geekcast Radio or Altered Geek. That would be awesome, because I would love to see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how it came out. Now, other custom things that I kind of dig into are graphics. So, like, when I don't want to buy vector art from somewhere,
right?
I teach myself how to remake it.
Hey, that's good. At least you're not stealing it.
No, I'm not stealing it, but it looks identical. So you could infer that it's stolen if you so choose, but it's not. I just taught myself how to do it, and then it's no longer an issue.
Exactly, because if you teach yourself a new skill, you can then hone that skill and, you know, go forward with it.
Yeah, so for instance, if you haven't noticed by now, why haven't you? But GeekCastRadio.com is going through a gradual refit, as it were, and the logo has totally changed, the style has changed, a lot of the podcasts are getting a new look. For the podcast art. There's a little bit of uniformity because at the bottom, they're going to say the GCRN down at the bottom. But for the rest of it, they're going to be very custom. And I've been teaching myself new skills, new how to make things, how to replicate things that I've seen. So like I taught myself Photoshop for the most part, as well as neon text and neon graphics and that kind of 80s aesthetic, almost Transformer-ish, but not. So I've had a lot of fun doing that. The funny thing is on the Geekcast Radio podcast art, the microphone that's on there, I actually saw one similar. And I made some tweaks to the design, but I essentially made that from scratch.
Right.
Based on the concept of another one I saw, but again, free. I did the same thing with like Tooncast and Studio 2009.
Yes.
That one, the microphone was custom. I did that. The television screen that's there, I made that from scratch as well. That was the one I was pertaining to with the custom art.
Yep.
I looked at one. I made it. I think mine's better, obviously. And then the controller, which is there in the art.
Yep.
I made that from scratch as well.
Very cool.
So it's got the D-pad. It even says Geekcast Radio Network. It's got start, select, and everything glows on it. Neon. And I figured, you know, why not? Let's see if I can do it. And I pulled it off.
That's so very cool.
I surprised myself. Not to sound conceited or anything, but it was.
Hey, you know what? It is an accomplishment because, again, the 11, 12, 13 years you've been doing this, you know, you've grown each time with the graphics you're doing now compared to the graphics you were doing in like year two or year three of the network. Totally different. totally more refined, you know.
Oh yeah, it's so weird to go back and look at the old stuff that I came up with and then look at the modern stuff, and I cringe looking at some of the old stuff, but I remember like what I learned along the process. So like as I revamp things, I change the look, I change the style, I change the, you know, just pretty much everything. More so because I get bored, but every now and again I do like a mass revamp like what I'm doing right now. So even while this is being recorded, even though it's the beginning of the week, I came up with a new style for the pull bag, and I'm sure by the end of the week I'll have figured out another art as well.
There you go.
But yeah, so I mean that's pretty much the episode this week.
Yeah, I'll say this, and I'll send you this so you can add the new stuff to it, or you might have the original. I don't know. You probably do. You always keep all your original files. It's funny because every now and then when I do share stuff online, not that I don't share stuff online, but when my memories pop up certain times of the year, obviously we're recording this June 1st, 2020, and it's our 11-year anniversary at GCR, and well, guess what pops up in my memories? The logo image from year 1 to year 10, and I'm like, oh my god, look at all these different logos, and look how far Steve has come in his logo design, because, wow, some of these I really dug back then. I still love, next to year 11 now, my favorite still is year 7's main GCRN logo. But yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's great.
And funny enough, I looked at the old Altered Geek logos and I was like, oh wow, it's changed quite a bit. So, but yeah, I think that about rounds it up this week. So, how can the good people get a hold of you?
Let's see, Twitter at TFG1Mike. You can find me on Facebook at TFG2Mike. I'm on Instagram, but I don't really use Instagram like I should, I guess. I only have it because of certain creators that I follow that are on it. So there's that. I don't know.
Works for me. I can be found at SCP21. So
until next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.